What's trending?
Well, number one, what's trending? It's something we just heard from Andy Reid, which is that Hollywood Brown will be the only Chiefs player not practicing today. That's, of course, significant as he's coming back from an injury suffered during that first preseason game. I think if we go back to our discussions right after the injury, a lot of us said, oh, he's probably not ready till week three. Then got a little excited yesterday.
They made it sound like, ooh, maybe. And I thought, okay.
But not practicing on a Wednesday doesn't mean for sure he's not playing, but that's not a good sign. And why push it? I think now we'd have to go back to the opposite direction and lean towards him not playing, right?
Yes. I also think that part of it is, like, we talk about this all the time, but, like, why push it? And we should have known this going into it. The Chiefs have an incredibly long history of being like, just one more week.
Well, it's so early part of me thinks season,
it's like
fun.
Week four before he's back. And after all this, where you think like, ooh, maybe he'll play week two. He won't even play week three after all of this. But I'll tell you right now,
that's fine.
My thought about him playing is probably not now on Sunday, based on that answer from Andy Reid, even though he did not rule him out yet for Sunday. Next up on Watch Training, the Royals get the shutout of the Yankees 5-0 behind Seth Lugo's 7 innings, 3 single, 10 strikeout performance in which he was absolutely sensational. All the way back to his pre-All-Star ways, he's now started 3 straight games against 3 straight American League active playoff teams. The Red Sox, Twins, whatever, doesn't matter. 3 playoff teams in which he has allowed just 2 earned runs in his last 3 starts over 21 innings pitched. The Royals just sent out today their arguments for Lugo and Cole Reagans for Cy Young Award winners, and just sent out why J.J. Piccolo should be Executive of the Year and why Q should be Manager of the Year. Now, those other two, those are your best cases. Q should be the Manager of the Year, in my opinion. I've already told you based on expectations. I still think vote is his biggest competition.
Well, odds for sure. It's
in it, too. And J.J. Piccolo, what's the argument against?
He's going to win that.
He got the absolute best deals in all of free agency, and his team took a 40-game swing in the positive.
So he's going to win Executive of the Year. I don't think
that's a lock.
That's not a question. Manager of the Year is still going to be a tight one. Remember, these are also voted on before the playoffs, so that's, you know, something to keep in mind. But when the Manager of the Year competition is going down to the same two guys in their own divisional race,
some voters
are just going to take the easy path and say, well, this guy won the division. So whoever that is.
His biggest favors are he won the division and he's a rookie manager.
Yeah.
But chooses. He took a 56-win team and made him 80-plus.
And some might say, well, that's why you have the Executive of the Year. I don't know. I'm just saying, I get the argument on both sides for that one. Executive of the Year should not even be
a question.
Next up on What's Trending, Sports Business Daily just put this out today. The opening weekend of the NFL season across the traditional broadcast networks, right? 21 million was the average. That number doesn't include the 14 million that watched the game in Brazil, which was on Peacock only. That number nearly doubled last year's streaming only regular season game. But you take a look, up 13 or 12% on traditional TV networks week one of the NFL season. So NFL doing just fine.
Turns out people still like the NFL. Who knew? Next up on What's Trending, update for the game tomorrow, Miami and Buffalo. Earlier, Mike McDaniel spoke to the media, said Raheem Mostert out for their matchup against the Bills, and Devin Achane will be a, as he put it, game time decision, which would leave him either the rookie, Jalen Wright, or Jeff Wilson. Jeff Wilson is good in a running offense. It used to be Kyle Shanahan, now it's in Miami. He's good for one stupid 120-yard, 2-touchdown game out of nowhere every year. Kind of feels like that's Thursday. Everyone thinks it's going to be the rookie, and it'll be Jeff Wilson who has a massive game.
We'll talk fantasy football tomorrow with our guy Paul Charchian. He joins us every Thursday from Guillotine Leagues. And today's a big waiver claim day for those of you out there playing fantasy football, whether you're in our Cody and Gold Guillotine League or your own. That's what's trending here on Cody and Gold. Don't forget, though, here in next month, we are going to be out in Las Vegas as the Chiefs take on the Raiders. We'll be hanging out with our friends at Circa. It is the best place to stay when you're in Las Vegas. We're going to have a great time. We're going to be doing our show from Circa on Thursday and Friday right at Stadium Swim in one of their cabanas right there, poolside. They got 6 pools. They have this 143-foot screen. It is sports heaven. Join us there. And on that party on Friday night, we'll be giving away tickets to the game as well. So we already know a couple of you have DM'd us that you're making the trip out there, you're staying at Circa, or you already have a trip planned. We'll continue to tell you about this, but it is the place to be whether you're staying there or not, you should just stay there and make it easy. But if you already got other arrangements, I get it. Join us on that Friday and Thursday.
You can book your stay for the game at CircaLasVegas.com, of course. And yeah, as Alex mentioned, come hang out with us in a poolside cabana for a Thursday and Friday. And then, yes, that party over at the Overhang Bar Friday night.
All right, let's go back out to Arrowhead and hear from Patrick Mahomes as he was addressing the media about this week and getting set to play Joe Burrow again.
I think you just see a raise in intensity just because you know that these games are going to matter at the end of the year. Obviously, it's early in the season. Everybody's working through stuff. Everybody's trying to get better and better. But you know that this could be a tiebreaker or whatever you want to call it at the end of the year that determines seeding on playoffs. And so it's definitely a rise in intensity, especially in these games against other contenders.
You get a little more talking, a little edge out there from the defense in these. Is that what you feel?
I wouldn't say usually not early in the season. It's because everybody's trying to figure stuff out with their teams and trying to do stuff and play fast. You get to playoffs, sometimes there's a little bit more talking here and there. But early in the season, you play these guys a lot. So even though there's trash talk maybe in the off season or whatever like that, you have respect for the guy on the other side of the field. And so it's going to be a great game, and I'm excited that we get to play at Arrowhead.
You guys play them a lot. It's almost always late in the year. This is a little bit weird to be playing in week 2.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, usually it's like the NFL saves it for later in the season, knowing it's going to be kind of one of those seeding games. But our schedule is very different this year. We have a lot of great teams early, and obviously we play like every day of the week. So it's a different schedule. It's a great test for us to play two of the best teams in the league back-to-back to start off the season. But it's going to be about how we adjust and respond whenever adversity hits.
Looking back, what allowed Rasheed to have the day that he did in the opener?
I think he's gotten better and better. I think throughout training camp, throughout into last year, he's gotten to be a more versatile receiver where he can do a lot of different things. We put him on some read routes. We put him on obviously a lot of slant routes, stuff like that, where he can win one-on-one, and he did that. And I think as the season goes on, you're going to see the full arsenal of routes that he can run. I mean, some where he can run deep routes, he can run intermediate routes, he can run those medium routes. I mean, he can do it all. And so just having all those other weapons around him as well, it takes off that focus on him that you kind of saw at some points last year. And I think that's what's going to make our offense so great.
You mentioned the other weapons. Xavier, heck of a day on Sunday. What can success do for him going forward?
Yeah, I think it's just going to be a spark, you know. It shows that what he can do. Obviously, it showed his speed. It showed how he's able to run routes and find open spaces. But it just kind of gives him that confidence. I think he already had it anyways, but to show that he can do it on Sundays or whatever day of the week that we're playing. And just kind of a start for him. I mean, we want him to keep building. We want to get him more and more involved in the offense. But a great start.
Looks like Noah Gray is going to be around for a little while now. What have you seen? What do you feel like he brings?
Yeah, I mean, just a smart player, extremely smart player that does a lot of physical stuff that we need in this offense. He's able to get himself open. He makes the catches whenever he's asked to do it. But a guy that can just do it all. And you need those guys in order to win football games. And he's one of those guys that he can come in for Travis and spots. And I have full confidence that he can go out there and make plays happen as well. And so he's learned a ton behind Trav. And you can see him getting better and better each and every year. And I was happy for him because he's one of those guys that does it the right way and deserves the contract that he got.
Patrick, this is away from football, but former President Trump referenced you and your family again today on Fox News in relation to his campaign. I just wonder what your reaction is to seeing that.
Yeah, I think I've always said I don't want my place and my platform to be used to endorse a candidate or do whatever either way. I think my place is to inform people to get registered to vote. It's to inform people to do their own research and then make their best decision for them and their family. And so I think that's every time I'm on this stage and I get asked these questions, I'm going to refer back to that because I think that's what makes America so great.
Did you think it was important, though? I don't know if important is the right word, but when you were at the U.S. Open this past weekend and you guys were there with Taylor and Travis, I mean, is that an important image to show that, you know, people who may have different philosophies can...
Yeah, I mean, I think I've always, even dating back, I think if you've seen my history, I've run up with people from every every aspect of life and every background. And I think the best thing about a football locker room and kind of how I've grown up in baseball locker rooms, everything about that is people can come together and achieve something and achieve a common goal. And I think if we can, I mean, we talked about it a while back, but I think if we can do that as a nation, I think that we can get the best out of each other. And so I think that's something that I do every single day. And whenever I'm hanging out with whoever, I'm not thinking about their political views or anything like that. I'm thinking about the people and how they treat other people. And I was with a lot of great people this weekend.
Do you have a thought about specifically about the idea of President Trump bringing up Brittany's name? Does that affect you one way or another?
No, I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's about me and my family and how we treat other people. And I think you see is that Brittany does a lot in the community. I do a lot of in the community to help bring people up and give people other opportunities to use their voice. And so it's in the political times, people are going to use stuff here and there. But I can't let that affect how I go about my business every single day and live my life. And try to live it to the best of my ability.
And another viral aspect, way less important, obviously, but what's your reaction to Nebraska quarterback Dylan Raiola just sort of mimicking every single aspect of your preparation and almost even the way he throws?
Yeah, I mean, it's cool, honestly. I mean, I was that guy. I grew up watching players. I remember being, when I would grow up, I loved Alex Rodriguez, played shortstop, and would try to make plays just like him and do stuff like that. And it helped me become the athlete that I am. And so I've kind of, it's just telling me I'm getting a little old. I think that's the biggest thing is that you have these guys that are coming up and doing some of the sidearm stuff and everything like that. But I know Dylan. I train with him in the off seasons. Great kid, a great football player, and I think he's going to make his own stamp on the game, and I think you've seen that early in his career.
Has he acknowledged that some of the stuff he's doing is mimicking you? It seems like publicly he's been hesitant to say that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't know if whenever you come in as a freshman, you want to be on Twitter and be the part of the team. I think he wants it to be about his team, and I think that's the right way to play the quarterback position is that it's not about you. It's about going out there and having success as a team, and they've done that so far this year. So even though I think he just kind of wants to push this out and play football and go out there and win the football games, I think that's the right way to play the position.
Patrick, have you had any contact with Tyreek since what happened the other day, and do you have any particular thoughts about that?
No, I mean, I haven't had any contact with him, but obviously an unfortunate situation. And you're glad that people are bringing light to it and there's an investigation being done to make sure everything was done the right way. But until that investigation's done, I won't have any comment on it.
Steve? Patrick, you spent a lot of time in Super Bowl these past few years, sitting in New Orleans this year. Kendrick Lamar was announced as the halftime performer. Any thoughts on whether it should have been him or Wayne or you?
I mean, two guys that I've always loved to listen to their music. I mean, I grew up on Lil Wayne, and then obviously Kendrick has been an icon for a long time. And so I don't think you could have made a wrong decision. I think both those guys are great. And I'm hopefully in the game. Well, I won't get to hear either one of them or whatever it is. But I'm excited for Kendrick to have that platform and show the artist that he is and show the world how hip-hop has really made a movement within our culture.
Thanks, Patrick.
All right, so that was Patrick Mahomes. We got everything covered today from one Patrick Mahomes. Thank you very much.
Football, non-football.
96.5.
Whether Raiola's trying to steal his identity.
Yeah, we hit on everything. Definitely hit on everything. And I hope as well that he has no idea who's performing at halftime because he's getting ready for the second half to go for the three-peat down in New Orleans. That's
what's
happening.
You don't get to watch it when you're in the Super Bowl.
For fans, I'm curious, who's performing at halftime of the Chiefs game? That's how I view it these days.
Yeah. I bet Bengals fans are really worried about who's performing.
Well, they'll get a watch
party.
They can do a watch party for that too. Yeah, they can do a watch party for that one as well. He was asked about Dylan Raiola. We talked about that a couple days ago. A very talented quarterback in Nebraska, and as I said, I think mimicking a great player
is
normal and common. Wearing the same clothes, the haircut. Every little thing, that's where it's a little weird. But
that's where
obviously,
it starts.
Patrick Mahomes is not going to throw the guy under the bus. He's going to support
him. And he trains with him in the offseason.
And he trains with him. And he won't probably be the last person to mimic their game. That's fine. That's cool. It's more of the, you know, wearing the same sunglasses and same T-shirt and same shoes and same pregame routine and same headband and all of it coming
together. It does go back to the same, like, stand-up comedian routine where he's like, it just means I'm getting a little bit older. He's 28. Like, they talk, like, the Olympics are always a perfect example. Like, look at this man competing for a gold. A true miracle. He's 27. And you're like, getting older, 28 years old. The problem is, like, if he had just been in the league and was just like a dude, there wouldn't be people mimicking me. He's the single best quarterback in the league by a mile.
He's
winning all the titles. Yeah. I imagine every single kid in every, like locally or even nationally, the most mimic quarterback's got to be.
You said it. You said it. Kid, though. Yeah. I think there's a difference if you have your 10-year-old son that wants the Mahomes haircut or the Bobby Wood Jr. haircut. I get that. Totally get that's way different to me than
if
the 19 year old
when you get the Bobby Wood Jr. haircut instead of shaving your head bald
if they win the World Series.
Yeah,
like the mullet.
I mean, fine,
you're gonna have to grow your hair out.
That's gonna take a while.
That's gonna take a minute.
It's gonna take too long. I feel like,
are we sure though that Dylan didn't have this haircut like before this whole thing? I don't know, but
I think the question was,
it is a popular haircut.
Mahomes has been playing quarterback in the NFL for 7 years, and Ryle is what, 19? So yeah, he might have had the haircut for a while, but it's still mimicking off of,
sure.
Anyway, I think he's really good at quarterback though.
I do think he's really good at quarterback.
I think Nebraska.
He did look really good.
Nebraska. We've had plenty of times to take shots at Nebraska over the last 10 years. They look to have a good team this year and a good quarterback, and they look pretty stable in that atmosphere. Yeah, it looks great. The atmosphere's always been good when they're good. That's like a lot of teams. That goes back to the
Royals.
Have
you been to a game in Lincoln?
The atmosphere's almost been good when they stink too.
I've been to two games there.
Two?
It is a great atmosphere. It's been a decade since I've been there, but I've been to two games up there.
Oh. It was a good time.
I had a great time in Lincoln.
Sold out both times?
Good little downtown scene, too. Right across the street from the stadium. It's a good area.
I've only been to Lincoln once.
City.
No, I don't have anything bad to say about Lincoln. I've had good times when I've been there.
I see people sending in some pre-snitches. The snitch line will be tomorrow. Coming back. It's been a little while. Snitch line back tomorrow on a Thursday, which means we could take your calls, 913-586-7965, if you've witnessed something, but that's tomorrow. So don't try to snitch on me or what you may or may not have seen
1 o'clock
on a
tomorrow.
Security camera. I've been told I've been told I will be given my own passcode for the alarm.
I need footage of you panicking with the alarm going off at UMKC.
And dipping.
Oh, it'd be great. It'd be so good.
Just leaving. I just left. Look, what was I going to do? Solving the problem wasn't going to be standing there.
Well, yeah, you just stand and wait for them to show up. Instead, you just avoided the problem altogether.
Yeah, that's how I prefer to handle it.
just avoid it altogether, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I prefer that.
It sounded like you were trying to get help, though. Like, it wasn't...
No, I was, but like I would have left if I didn't know where to get help.
All right, we got Vern coming up here in about 7 minutes or so, our Royals insider. We'll talk to him about Tommy Pham since we push things back a little bit. I want to talk to him about Tommy Pham leading off. But first, let's get to all 32 around the NFL. So we know Brazil hosted the Eagles and Packers last Friday.
Sure.
I just mentioned the ratings for it and everything. It was only on Peacock. And so the streaming numbers were actually higher than last year's regular season game. Makes sense. It's an opener. But Roger Goodell also gave an interview while that game was going on. He said he wants 16 international games. Right now, owners have already approved 8 for next season, I guess it would be. 16 is their goal. Look, this we know
so
they're
every
continue.
Single week of the regular season except the last week.
That
of the
means every team has one too, correct?
If that's what he wants, that means that's what the owners want financially as well. That's going to happen. It will coincide, I believe, whenever they obviously add an additional week to the season or go to 20.
But it works now because the 9-8 home game means 8 home, 8 on the road, and 1 international.
But like, I don't think, do you guys think next year we're getting 16 international? I don't think they're doing it next year. I think this is a gradual buildup, and it might coincide with extending the regular season, getting rid of a preseason game, and that is where eventually we get to 16. My whole thing on this has always just been, it's if you're a season ticket holder and you lose a game out of your package, that's who it stinks even more for. I'm sure, you know, some of the players probably don't like the travel aspect to it, but this is just the reality of where the league is. There's no stopping this. Like, this is where it's headed.
They know how popular the league is in the United States. They want to take that worldwide. They are not the most popular sport worldwide, and they dominate the popularity here. That's what this is about. I've decided. I figured out the team. Took me one whole week.
All right.
I know where Bill Belichick is going to coach next season. He is going to coach the New York Giants. That's who he'll be in charge of. They'll go back to, like, we're a defensive team. He'll find some random salty veteran to lead the squad for a year, and then he'll take one next year. He's going to – because right now, you know, I used to think Bill Belichick could get his pick of the litter. Didn't feel that way this last offseason, and a whole year off's not going to make me feel a lot different. I think Bill Belichick is the New York Giants head coach week 1 next season.
We already talked about the quarterback stuff earlier. Are you sure that he wants to go through the rookie quarterback thing again, though?
I mean, he was willing to do. I think if they would have let him do it in New England, he would have done it again. And in Atlanta, he might have done it. I mean, obviously they were going after Kirk Cousins, but I think he'd have done it there too.
You're saying he might have still drafted Penix.
I think Bill Belichick just likes to coach. Yeah. I think if there was only one job available in the entire league, Andy Reid would take it. Now, he's choosing the better jobs, right? Same with Bill Belichick. But if there's only one job available to him, and I think that one will be the Giants, I think he's taking it.
For all I know, Sam Darnold might be the quarterback of the Giants because they might put J.J. McCarthy in there next year, depending on how things go. But I think we learn a little bit.
Darnold good?
I think we learn this weekend if he actually is good or not, Cody, because week one, he looked really good. Who did they play? The New York Football Giants with those horrendous uniforms, by the way, those ugly throwbacks.
Yeah, those are bad.
But I think we learn a little bit about Sam Darnold this weekend. I know he's got Jordan Addison. I know he's got Aaron Jones. I know he's got Jordan Jefferson. But I think we learn how good the Vikings team could potentially be with Sam Darnold as quarterback this weekend because they're taking on the San Francisco 49ers in that defense.
Jimmy G, by the way, that'll be the starting quarterback.
Oh, that's
gross. He's currently suspended.
That's gross.
He's currently the backup in LA.
That's exactly
with
what Belichick wants, I'm sure.
Coming up next, we will get to Royals baseball right here on your home for the Royals, 96.5 The Fan. Our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, will join us as the Royals continue their series against the Yankees. I want to ask him about Seth Lugo, of course, and that unbelievable performance and what that could mean in a few weeks. That's next. Coming up in about 12 minutes, we'll get to the random question of the day. We'll also hear from Xavier Worthy in about 25 minutes, Chiefs rookie wide receiver, obviously a great debut. Now it looks like with Hollywood Brown not practicing today, perhaps he could have a huge role again in terms of the snap count, at least. So we'll get back to the Chiefs in just a little bit. But the Royals continue their series in the Bronx tonight, taking on the Yankees. We know last night was perfection. If you could just dream up a scenario of how a baseball game can go in the playoffs, they got exactly that from Seth Lugo and, of course, ultimately from Lucas Ursig as well, as Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, joins us. He's got his on-deck show tonight at 5 o'clock here on 96.5 The Fan. Vern, I know there was still a lot of people, and maybe they're still out there, that said, hey, what are they going to do against the upper echelon teams? We've added, like, new qualifiers each week of this season, I feel like, to prove what the Royals may or may not be. Do you feel like last night, what won some people over?
I don't know if there are those people remaining. I mean, they're 9-10 over the course of this riptide, this 20-game stretch, man. Going into it, I think we all were I was hoping that they would go 10-10. I said I would take 8-12 right now. So once they picked up that eighth win, with the help that Boston and Detroit and Seattle have lent over the past few weeks, knowing that that postseason spot is basically wrapped up, man, this team has now entered house money stage for me. I mean, everything that I've asked of them from the offseason to maintain through May and don't drown and do this and outlast this, they've done it all. If they don't win the division, too bad. Can I be upset that they're not a better, a more well-rounded playoff team? I mean, for God's sakes, they're a playoff team. So, no, to get a performance like that last night where, you know, base running is on display, you get some, well, the defense really never needed to make an extraordinary play because the Yankees never touched second base against Lugo, Bubich, and John Schreiber. So, listen. I think the tests are now done. The only test that, to me, remains is what do you do with the opportunity in October? I know what Salvi's going to do with it. I feel like I'm pretty sure what Bobby's going to do with it. I'm hoping this rotation can flourish because, man, they're the reason why this team's going there, and I'm excited for them to get their day in the spotlight coming up in a few weeks.
I think it's something maybe we're going to discuss more as a show tomorrow, Vern, but I think that's or later in today, but I think it was part of the reason I told Gold that I viewed last night's game going into the series. I viewed last night's game and tonight's game more as a better litmus test of what the Royals are going to be up against a playoff team. I figured game one, if you told me they're starting three games on the road against the New York Yankees, well, Brady Singer's not starting and James MacArthur's not coming in for the seventh. That doesn't tell me what playoff team the Royals are. When Lugo starts and the rest of the lineup are in, and tonight when Cole Reagan starts and the rest of the lineup is in, that tells me how they actually match up against the Yankees. And at the very least, I know they're not going to get their ass kicked like what happened in the earlier part of the season when the Royals were still trying to find their way against winning teams.
Yeah, but you know, come October, it just matters. You know, who's hot? Who's playing well in 3 weeks from now? You know, certainly the bullpen, the pitching staff is going to look very different come the postseason. But again, man, we have 16 games remaining. We know who this team is, what this team is, who's capable of what the expectations are going to be in 3 weeks for Lugo, Reagans, Bobby, Salvi, what we're going to expect out of Massey, out of Melendez. Again, to me, the litmus test, the tests, period, are done because the postseason is such a very different game, and yet the Royals game can't change all that much. You know, Lorenzen, Singer, Marsh, those guys being available in the bullpen, makes the team better, but still, I'm not in a rush to take Waka, Lugo, or Reagans out of the game, while a majority of, you know, Cleveland, San Diego, Milwaukee, maybe even New York, outside of a Gerrit Cole start. While a lot of teams might be quick to go to their bullpen and start throwing the big dogs at you, I think the big dogs are your starters in Kansas City. So that's why I feel like we know what this team is, and we have a peek of what it's going to look like in October. You need Lugo to face Aaron Judge three times. You need Reagans to face Aaron Judge three times because he's likely going to come to the dish four times. Lugo can handle, Urseg can handle one of them, but then you're going to want Waka, Lugo, Reagans. You're going to want them in the big spot. At least I do. For as good as Lorenzen and Marsh could be in that spot, for as clutch as maybe a Hunter Harvey, James No, there's no other option, right? You want it to be starter handing it off to Lucas Urseg. That's going to be the recipe for this team.
When you look at what the starting rotation is, you can do the pretty simple math here now, Vern, which means if the rotation lined up the exact same it would the rest of the way, the last three games of the regular season would be Lugo, Reagans, and you would think, well, that's not what I want. I want to line that up differently if you're going into those final three games, and Waka, of course, for those final three. Should they? I know they don't want to give up on the division, but what you're saying is they're 5.5 games up with 16 to play. At what point do they have to start thinking about how do we shift this rotation so that those guys are available in the playoff series and not the last three games against the Braves?
I think once the division, once a first-round bye is out of reach, I think then you start lining it up for the wild card series, because until the wild card series is the last option, I'm trying to earn that bye. So I don't know when that happens, but shoot, 16 games remaining. I would imagine it's going to be
pretty
fairly
quick.
Clear by this time next week. Yeah, so you know, a week, 7 games, 8 games from now, I think it'll be pretty clear of whether or not they should put the foot on the gas pedal and try and track down Cleveland over the course of those final 6 games on the road against Washington and Atlanta, or if that's all right, let's prepare for this postseason push, these 3 straight games starting up on Tuesday, October 1st.
We're talking to Josh Fernier, our Royals insider. At this point, there's no question about the leadoff spot anymore, right? That's all solidified.
No, that's Tommy Pham.
It's nice not to have that worry anymore. We were talking about that 2 weeks ago, and now Tommy Pham has just completely grabbed onto that.
Yeah, look, he's not replacing Vinny, but what he is doing is giving you a quality at-bat in the first inning, which is what Vinny brought this team. Pham, you know, his OPS with the Royals, right around 800. Yeah, you'll take that, and he's consistently hitting bullets up there, giving you a quality plate appearance. He's terrific in the clubhouse. Michael Massey going on about the example that he set. Yeah, the leadoff spot certainly has been checked moving forward. A corner outfield spot that, you know, his ability to bounce between left and right, and I think we'll see him at DH possibly come the postseason.
I just really look at the lineup. It helped them so, like, I thought the way that it worked was they were never as bad as they were going to lose every game just because they didn't have Vinny Pasquantino. But they needed, like, this short winning streak to remind themselves they can still win baseball games. You've seen this before. They started to reel. They had this massive injury, and then losing followed it, Vern, and then they had to find a way to kind of recalibrate, and now they're just back to winning the same way. Does it seem kind of silly now, like, that we were, losing Vinny does matter, but that they were going to have no offense, I guess, in the absence of Vinny?
No, because, again, that was prior to Tommy Pham arriving and producing. Yeah. Robbie Grossman, Yuli Gurriel, they've certainly brought something. You know, you look at, Gurriel's come through with some big knocks. He's he drove in a run. He scored a run in each of his first three starts since coming over. So I'm not trying to knock them, but that Tommy Pham, that's the Tommy Pham that we thought teams were going to line up for going into the trade deadline. Now, we went to St. Louis and laid an egg, never really got going there. But yeah, this is, again, exactly like Alex said, this is what this team has been missing all season. They're still missing Vinny Pasquantino. And to be honest with you, you know, moving Salvi back up to the three spot, giving Bobby the proper protection, I think also played a factor into why the offense struggled so immediately in the absence of Vinny Pasquantino. But, you know, let's not get this twisted. Come October, when you're facing a Garrett Cole in game one, a Corbin Burns in game one, you know, you're going to be hard-pressed to allow Bobby or Salvi, even if they're batting back-to-back, to beat you. MJ, Renfro, Massey, one of these guys, Paul DeJong, they're going to have to step up in a big way. So I still think the absence of Vinny is glaring. Thankfully, of late, your all-star pitchers have been extraordinary. Alec Marsh has been answering the bell. But, yeah, I think the postseason will shine a light on the whole of Vinny Pasquantino, certainly.
You know, the Royals today, they sent out their executive of the year pitch, basically, and manager of the year pitch for both Matt Quatrero and J.J. Piccolo. I'll see if you agree with us that, I mean, executive of the year should be a no-brainer in baseball this year. I mean, that's done. What about manager of the year? It's been down to two guys all year anyway, I feel like, and Stephen Vogt and obviously Matt Quatrero. Do you think that the voters are just going to simplify it and be a little lazy and just say, well, whoever wins the division is who they're giving it to?
That's where I would go. And I am lazy, so I'm fine with that characteristic. But
oversimplifying it a little.
Well, I think winning the division, there is something to it, right? It almost slipped away from him. And the shoes that he's replacing, it's not as if he was the bench coach and he's just sliding over, taking over for Terry Francona. I was and still am amazed that that team, that organization, hasn't missed a beat while you lose one of the three best managers of the last quarter century. So I'm fine with Stephen Vogt. If they win the division, him walking away with the crown.
So if you voted across the board, let me see if you get this right. You'd vote right now, vote as the AL manager of the year. You'd give JJ the executive of the year. That's a no.
No doubt.
Would you give Lugo or Reagans the time of day, or just give Skubal the Cy Young? And would you give Bobby the time of day, or would you just give it to Judge?
Listen, Bobby is the MVP. If the Yankees win their division, okay, I can understand him receiving the award. If the Royals don't win their division and the Yankees do, fine, Aaron Judge is the MVP. But if neither wins their respective division, Bobby, to me, is just so clearly the MVP. I mean, what he's doing is more rare than what Aaron Judge is doing. He's no longer on pace to hit 62 home runs. I think he's on pace for like 55, 56. You know how many times I've seen that in my life?
Plenty.
I've never seen a shortstop do what Bobby's doing this season because it's never been done. I mean, the numbers that Bobby's on pace to put up have really only been put up by Colorado Rockies when the building first opened. He's doing it in Kansas City at shortstop for a playoff team, hitting at the top of the lineup every single freaking day. Bobby's the American League MVP, and as far as the Cy Young is concerned, man, Tarek Skubal is pretty nasty. The fact that Detroit is still even in the race helps him. So, yeah, I'm fine with Skubal walking away with the award. But, you know, what Lugo and Reagans are doing right now is battling it out for the best season put forth by a Royal since Zach Greinke's 2009. These two, it's the best combo we've seen in Kansas City since Mark Gubazon, Brett Saberhagen back in 1989. These guys are putting together two of the finest seasons in franchise history, doing it together while Bobby's putting up an MVP season. Salvi's cementing his case for Cooperstown. Listen, we're never going to forget this season. No matter how it finishes, this is a unforgettable summer of baseball in Kansas City.
Did you see how Aaron Judge cursed himself, Vern?
No, I didn't.
He does not have a home run since he appeared in a home run derby in a Paw Patrol episode. He won a home run derby in a Paw Patrol episode, and that's been it. Not a single home run since the date it aired.
Well, that's science.
That would never happen to Bobby, the true MVP. He could have been in Paw Patrol and still be hitting
slugging
dingers.
And if it did, you'd sing a song, fix the whole thing, and we'd be well on our way.
4-1, Vern. 4-1 since the September anthem.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Nobody benefits from it more than me, so I greatly appreciate it.
There you go. Josh Furnier's On Deck show tonight at 5 o'clock right here on your home for the Royals, 96.5 The Fan. He mentioned the home run seasons. I just was curious. It looks like there's like 48 players have hit 50-plus home runs before. So, like, to his point, like, 50,
plenty of people have done that.
It's impressive, but it's not, you know, it's not like there's only been seven guys in baseball history.
I think the conversation was, like, I think the MVP conversation has continued to shift because the conversation was different when Aaron Judge was on pace to hit 65 homers. I understand he still has 50, but because he hasn't hit a homer in 2.5 weeks, the numbers have come more in line with the other parts of Bobby's season that I think favor him as the MVP. But I also factor in the things that I know. Like, I don't understand why we can't factor in every single thing in factoring in an MVP, but just ignore the ballpark he plays in. We seem to ignore that as a factor for his stats at all. As it sits right now, if Aaron Judge had to play 162 games at Kauffman Stadium, he'd have 36 home runs, and Bobby would have 29. So there's not some massive difference in their power numbers. One guy plays in a Cracker Jack box, and one guy plays in a real major league stadium.
No, it's a fair point. In this conversation, when we're talking about two specific players, I hear you. In general, nothing annoys me more than people complaining about dimensions of other ballparks.
Yeah,
it drives me crazy.
But in this particular instance, I think it's worthy of a conversation.
In this one, it matters. Generally, I can't stand that. But in this head-to-head thing, sure. I think going back to what we said a couple months ago, I told you for Bobby Witt Jr. to win it, whether we think it's fair enough for him to win it, I think the Royals have to win the division. And it doesn't seem like
the same standards being set for Judge, which seems unfair.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of members, these are baseball writers, two writers in every big league city for a respective league vote on this. And I think a lot of them have probably made up their mind, fair or not. And if we're factoring in who has been most valuable, I think we do know who that is. And of course, that's Bobby Witt Jr. But New York market, New York Yankees, home runs, it's a lazy way of looking at it, and people are going to side that way.
I know. It frustrates me.
Random question.
For you, Gold. For you, Drew, over in the text line, 913-586-7965. Of course, you can hit us up. YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Facebook. We live stream the show. You might have seen The Drive was on all of those as well yesterday. Idea behind all three shows will soon be
I noticed
up.
He's on camera now. Streaming. Carrington's on camera now, and you notice there's no pins, no chewed up pins in our
up
studio.
His workspace,
maybe,
huh?
We should have done this a long time ago.
This is like an episode of MTV's Room Raiders. He decided to clean things up a little bit once he realized there's going to be people going through his stuff. Huh. Seeing what they can see here on the other side changes the math a little bit. Okay, maybe that's what's going on. The question I have for you today comes via a survey I was sent, in which it says 1 in 4 U.S. sports fans lose sleep over their favorite team or athlete. According to the study, on average, U.S. sports fans lie awake for 62 minutes after a poor performance by their favorite team or athlete, with New Jersey leading the way in sleeplessness of an average of 92 minutes of what they call, quote, ceiling time. So the question I have for you today is, do you have a harder time falling asleep if your team performs poorly, as this survey would suggest?
So it's the opposite. If the team does well, you have a hard time. It's the opposite. Uh-huh. If things are going well, if there's a big game the next day, it's harder to sleep because you're like excited, right? Sunday morning, you can't wait to get to the first Sunday of the NFL season, right? You're excited, things like that. If the team loses a game on a Thursday night game, like the Lions, like, I'm ready to go to bed. Like, just go to bed, wake up, and get done with this thing.
You're just like, it's depressing. Like, I'm going to bed. Forget this stupid game ever existed.
I'm not sitting up all night angry and like, oh my gosh, my team sucks, like Jets fans are doing. It sounds like a lot of New Jersey.
92 minutes every single person in New Jersey is. But yeah, in fairness, how much winning has New Jersey done in any sport lately?
We need to get Drew some Ambien, man. He's struggling after the Bengals. He's not sleeping at all right now with what's going on with Joe Burrow and the Bengals.
Again, as I've said before, my life, as I said this weekend as well, my day is not ruined if the Bengals lose. It's really not. I slept like a baby just as much as I normally do.
If the Chiefs win, you're amped up. You're watching highlights. You're enjoying Xavier Worthy running 100 miles an hour. You know, that kind of stuff. Versus the losing, you know,
Listen,
it's something that
they could lose 42-0 on Sunday, and I will not lose, and I will lose just as much sleep as I would if they won 42-0. I will sleep fine.
I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe that makes me a bad fan. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. But it is nothing has ever in sports made me lose sleep over and a long time, if ever, that I can remember.
Someone says it depends. So it depends on the game. Chiefs prime time? Yeah, I'm thinking about it for a bit, grinding it a bit. K-State 11 a.m.? It's out of my system before I go to bed.
That's fair.
It probably didn't. Someone just says, I put sports in perspective about 10 years ago or so. Now, they said this is dumb. See, that's why I don't think it's dumb. I do think my perception, I think I used to let it affect my mood more. But now because of my chosen career path, you know what? I'm not grinding all night because the Royals lost 10-4 to the Yankees the other night.
Oh, well, definitely not a regular season baseball.
I just lay my head down and go to bed. Oh, whoopsie. I guess MacArthur gave up a homer. And same as if they won 5-0 the night before. Well, good night, everybody. Royals win. The other part about baseball that's changed is now those games end long before I go to sleep anyway. Because baseball games are 2.5 hours. They're ending at this time of year, 8:30. 9 o'clock at night. I'm not staying up late just because the Royals lost a regular season game. I think this applies more to playoff things. I think if the Chiefs lose in the AFC championship game in a playoff round, you do kind of like, you think you might just go to bed right away, but I think you do have a little ceiling time where you're like, damn it. I can't believe they blew that game. You look up the play again. I do think you do some of that.
When the Bengals lost the Super Bowl to the Rams, I don't think I lost any sleep, but it was one of those things where it's like, dang, man, it sucks, but it's not.
But you just went right to bed? You didn't stay up later than normal?
No. What time would the game have ended at Central Time?
11? I don't know.
9:30?
Oh, no. Yeah, Super Bowl. Yeah, like 9?
I was up till probably 11:30.
Okay, so normal time.
For me, it's like it's much easier to be like, I'm just this sucks. They lost, so I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it's
you're
just
excited
moving.
When you're excited,
you got the adrenaline going. You're feeling good. You can't wait to get to if it's night before Super Bowl, obviously
same
you're definitely not sleeping.
Like you win a good parlay that was worthy of, like, let's say you had a 10-leg parlay and you were going to win $1,000. If you win it, you're saying you're up for a lot. But if you lose it on the final leg, you just go to bed.
Yeah.
Like, screw this parlay.
Yeah, I'm like, fresh start the next day, please. So that's kind of how
I would view it.
That's what I said right away. Yeah. I think it's the other way around.
So somebody said the way I do is because I'm used to losing.
There is a certain amount of it washes over you a little bit, depending on your fandom. I think that there's some truth to that.
I agree, but I think, like, for Lions fans, probably really depressing for a lot of those fans last year, the way that the season ended. For the Bengals, I'm sure fans, it was like almost a magic carpet ride all the way up to the Super Bowl. They had a team. The team was almost had no business being where they were. They were in the Super Bowl against the Rams. They lost. And you were so close. It sucked. That was the closest that I think I'll ever be to losing sleep, I guess. Yeah, I promise that I will not lose sleep this weekend, regardless of the result.
It's just an adrenaline thing. For if things are going
well. Someone said D Ford caused me some ceiling time. But that was before they had. I also think it's different, like what Drew's saying. I think you probably used to lose more sleep when it was your team hadn't accomplished the things it accomplished. The second the Chiefs started winning a bunch of Super Bowls, they lose some regular season game to the Raiders. I don't care if it's 11 o'clock at night. You're not stewing. Bedtime. Who cares?
Yeah.
I'll just sleep and deal with this thing tomorrow.
And on the flip side, if you're the Panthers, you're like, this sucks, and you're just
they knew their season was going to suck anyway, so I don't think they're feeling that.
But
like,
right.
For baseball, though, regular season, there's no chance.
Don't lose sleep over regular season.
There's 162 games. I mean, this is what we've tried to preach the entire season. Like, I mean, how many times in May, June, July did we come in after a loss or whatever, and you would have thought the text line, the world was ending? I mean, and the season was over at that point. The season was over for the Royals about 15 times, according to the text line, during the season. And here we are.
Yeah. It's not over?
It's not.
They got a 5.5-game lead with 16 games to play. It would take an epic collapse for them to miss the playoffs at this point. The games.
Yeah. Even when they were playing good, like early in May or whatever, and I would do an after-hours show, the text line would say, it doesn't matter, this is the same old Royals, just wait for it to happen. Like, that's I'm not losing any sleep over this because when it happens, it's going to happen. It hasn't happened.
All right, coming up next, we're going to hear from Chiefs rookie wide receiver Xavier Worthy, plus the test of another rookie going up against Cincinnati.